We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome into Floyd Street's Finest. He is Coach Mark Lieberman. I am Jack Grossman. Thanks for tuning in. As always, a part of the Field of 68 Podcast Network. Like, subscribe, do all those things that I always forget to say at the start and the end of the podcast on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, whatever you're watching or listening to us on. Coach, how you been, my man?
I've been good. Doing a bunch of things. Sorry, I've missed your show and missed doing this with you because I really enjoy it. I know you've had some, you know, you haven't had any slouches filling in, so that's the good part. But it's great to be back with you, Jack.
Oh, always pleasure is all mine to have you back on the podcast, Coach. With the Houston Oilers pennant behind you there, that's a new one. I think you're back in the bullpen there at ESPN Louisville, right?
Yeah, I'm in the bullpen. The fabulous one, Phil Baker's. They've got a lot of stuff through here. You've got Captain America. You've got a Papa Shot, Joe Burrow. Yeah, you got quite a few things back there. I could probably give you a tour on the next episode.
So. That'd be a fun one. I was at one point the ESPN Louisville Papa Shot King, but I think I've been bested since then.
Right?
Yes, okay. I was. But I like that was another life. But anyways, Coach, I made a phenomenal decision on Wednesday.
Talk to me.
I, of course, have since gone back and I watched the Louisville-Notre Dame game Thursday morning, but I made the decision to boycott the Louisville game and the Indiana game, you know, the two teams I follow more than anyone.
Of course.
And I instead have a buddy that's a big Florida fan that I work with down here in Atlanta who sent me a text on, like, Monday, Tuesday saying, hey, tickets for the Alabama-Florida game are $10. You want to go? And I'm like,
really?
Hell yeah, absolutely. So I was in Coleman Coliseum last night for a top 25 matchup, reminiscing. Yes, there we go. That's how I talk. On what it used to be like to have a top 25 matchup in late February. And it was a really fun game. I mean, went to overtime. I thought, you know, Todd Golden probably should have fouled on the last possession that Alabama had when they were down one with only about a 5.5 second differential between shot and game clock. They ended up kind of killing them, but two really good teams, high level offensive basketball, a lot of fun. And with the way the Louisville and I know no one else cares, but the Indiana games went last night, probably a good decision.
I think so.
That game instead. But anyway,
I'm gonna interject a quick coaching comment. It's so important this time of the year that special situations are practiced in February, that you are going over it ad nauseum, that your players understand, do you want a foul? Do you not want a foul? Do we have a foul to give on a sideline out of bounds? If we don't have a timeout, where we want to, you know, where we want to go with the ball, time and score, are we calling a timeout? So all that stuff that you mentioned, like with Ty Golden not fouling, like those things are so important this time of the year for coaches to just go over and over and over again.
Yeah, and that was a situation where they were coming out of the timeout after they had gotten the bucket to get back within one. So it was very – I thought Florida executed what Todd Golden wanted them to do. Like, they had some token pressure in the backcourt, and then they kind of came up and tried to trap Sears and the ball handlers a couple times at half court to try to surprise them a little bit. But for me, I felt like Alabama's the best offense statistically in college basketball. Maybe don't let the best offense in college basketball dictate how the game ends. Especially when, you know, they actually end up getting a stop initially, but then they gave up an offensive rebound and a putback to make a 3-point game. About 5.5 seconds left at that point. You're asking for a lot to happen there instead of trying to extend the game, maybe get a missed free throw, take advantage of something like that. But I don't know. Would you have fouled in that spot?
It really is. I wouldn't say game to game, but there's philosophies about, you know, if we're going to make our free throws in those situations. So, you know, I wasn't too familiar with the ending of that game. But I will tell you that those type of things are just so big this time of the year. That's just, we're talking about everything. You know, the end of games, because you might not have a timeout. You need to have a play. You don't want to go into a game either, Jack, like that you're drawing something up on a board that your guys haven't practiced. Like, you want to instill them with confidence, say, look, we've run this in practice over and over again. You guys get it. We understand. Or this is what we're going to do to get to the free throw line. And then a lot of teams don't prepare. Like, if you need to miss a free throw, one thing I always had our players do was hold up their left hand or their right hand, and we'd know we'd miss to the left or the right and be able to – pin down one guy and have another guy curl around. So just a bunch of little things that you want to do to make sure your guys are prepared for any situation.
Where did you land on, is, I don't think I've ever asked you this before, and we're already here, so might as well. Where'd you stand on fouling up three late?
Yeah. In college basketball, I just think that you need to do it. And, but that's something, again, I don't want to do it too early. You know, you don't want to do it all of a sudden you're up three with 12 seconds to go. You don't want to foul at nine. You want to make sure, what I like to do is go into a soft 2-2-1, but we're matched up off it. Let them bring the ball over. As soon as they cross half court, you know, we get an extra 2 or 3 seconds. So now we're fouling with about 4 or 5 seconds to go. I think that makes a huge difference.
Yeah, because you definitely don't want to foul too early there, because then, you know, you're
right.
You're doing the other team's job for them. You're extending the game for no reason.
Exactly right. I'm surprised how many coaches don't extend games. Because knocking down free throws, you know, it's a huge part of it. Even if guys are great free throw shooters, it's a little different. So I'm always a big believer in extending the games, especially, you know, when you're down.
Oh, for sure. Well, anyways, all right, we've delayed it long enough. We got to get into it. Louisville, Notre Dame on Wednesday night. And what's become, you know, they had the Georgia Tech game that they won. Florida State before that. 1-2 out of 3, almost won Syracuse. It looked like, I don't want to say turned a corner, because they had kind of survived the brunt of the ACC schedule, but it looked like, you know, playing the bottom half of the ACC in what's a bad league this year, especially near the bottom and in the middle of it, that it was okay. Maybe they'll at least compete in some of these games for whatever the heck that's worth. I kind of made the argument with Jeff Greer last week that I didn't think it was worth too much, but it's still better than what's happened in the Boston College second half and what happened against Pittsburgh, obviously, and then Notre Dame last night. The biggest thing for me is just kind of what's happened to Louisville's offense. I mean, this is a game where you know, Notre Dame's better defensively than offensively, but Sky Clark and Brandon Huntley Hatfield had 34 points. In this one, 14 of 24 shooting, 54%. Everyone else other than those two dudes were 5 of 32 from the floor, less than 16% from the field. It took until the 8:42 mark in the second half for someone other than Clark, Huntley Hatfield, or Trey White to have a field goal. How does that happen? And I mean, not that Louisville's in spectacular offensively, but they have been better on that end up until this last stretch.
I think there's two things. I think number one is that the way Notre Dame was playing, it wasn't conducive for what Louisville likes to do as far as just back you down, power up around the basket. They were playing off players. They were making them shoot mid-range shots. They were staying down on pump fakes. They weren't letting Mike James get a spot he likes. So he was ending up shooting, you know, contested jump shots rather than getting to the rim and using his shoulder and his strength to get fouled. So Notre Dame's plan as far as how to defend everybody, including trapping the bigs, and not just the bigs, Mike James, really trapping anybody who got the ball in the low post or the short corner. So, you know, that was one method of as far as that goes. And then you have guys like Sky Clark is, you know, you had some synergy going with this team. Tyler, the same thing. But when you miss practice, and Coach Payne talked about that, those guys hadn't been practicing. You know, they just played, they didn't have any live contact. Now you're out of rhythm again because guys have synergy and they're comfortable. And when you miss a game or two or a couple practices, yes, it could affect the symmetry of your team.
Yeah, for sure. And I thought, to piggyback off that, Notre Dame did a phenomenal job with that post trap, especially, you know, a lot of times they were trapping off of whoever Caleb Glensman was, a guy that, you know, gives a lot of effort, has been a good rebounder for Louisville of late, but isn't exactly the offensive threat yet.
Yeah, they were going with, you know, traditional four man coming. That was kind of like their idea of it. And like you mentioned, you know, a Trey White, if he gets the ball, he can create his own shot. Caleb Glenn can't. So, yeah, there was a method to it. Most teams, Virginia will always send their bigs over, you know, and it's always the five and the four who are trapping or whatnot in this type of situation. They did a great job of zoning out.
Yes, and that was the next thing I was going to say.
Taking away ball side and really plugging that middle and forcing a skip pass, which is what you really want to do. And we saw where Okorafor struggled, you know, the one time he was trapped. And, you know, that's something that, you know, you constantly work on. But, you know, if you're not sure teams are going to do it and you don't really prep for it, you know, it's tough. And guys were just not moving the way that you need to. Someone's got to dive. Someone's got to replace. You want to try and overload that side on the trap.
Yeah, and they also did a good job of cutting off Louisville's drives, because that's really been that's how Louisville gets their points. Post subs, driving with the dribble, and getting to the free throw line. Louisville got the free throw line 16 times, but they had uncharacteristically bad shooting night from the stripe. They missed half of them. But when you're not getting, you know, the points from the free throw line, you only had 22 points in the paint because you're not being able to, you know, dribble drive as effectively as you normally are, and you're getting post doubled all the time, and you're not hitting jump shots on the back end of it, because one, Notre Dame's been, as you said, did a really good job rotating out of those traps, and two, Louisville just hasn't been able to hit the broad side of the barn in the month of February from behind the arc. Or that, you know, leads up to a lot of things that aren't going your way, to where you're trying to figure out how to get some points on the board. Because we know Louisville's defense has been particularly awful. We'll get to that. But on the offensive end, that's kind of where Louisville has to carry itself right now. And the last two games, they just haven't looked the same on the offensive end that they were looking at in mid-January, and even a couple games they had at into February.
Well, Notre Dame did, number one, they did a really good job of limiting them to one shot. I thought Louisville at times needs to send everybody to the boards. They're as bad as they are transitionally defensively. I mean, it doesn't hurt. Send everybody. Send all five guys if you need to get an offensive rebound. And the way Notre Dame was playing, you know, I'm big on half an arm's distance or tracing the face and really crowding guys with gap integrity. Notre Dame was just saying, okay, just make some mid-range shots that are somewhat contested. Go for it, you know, but you're not getting in the paint. You saw the guys, like you said, sloughing off, really packing in, forcing the kickouts, and they would close out and contest, but it was almost like, okay, you're not getting paint, you know, you're not scoring in the paint. You're going to have to score mid-range shots. You know, Huntley Hatfield did a nice job early, but then again, you know, and that's another thing. I thought they should have done more high-low action where Huntley Hatfield's in the middle of the floor or rolling down the middle, because that's a tough area to trap from, and that leaves one-on-one coverage. So roll and replace actions would have been nice as far as against a team like Notre Dame.
Yeah, some middle post-ups would have been nice also. That's something that Louisville doesn't really do. You look at – obviously, it's probably unfair to compare them to Zach Edey and Purdue, but one of the things that Purdue does so well –
Just a tad.
Just a tad, but better than literally anyone in the country, is that they're able to get Zach Edey in position where, you know, he sets a ball screen, he'll set a cross screen, something like that, but they'll have the floor spread – and post him up right in the middle of the paint, to where you really can't double him in that spot because, you know, the floor is so spaced and there's not anyone there. Louisville almost always is posting Huntley Hatfield on one of the blocks. And that's a much easier place to double than it is when you post him in the middle, like, you know, a Purdue, just to name one team, is able to do so much. Or again,
That's all connected. So if you're not working on the timing of understanding the angles to come off in a slot off that type of ball screen, or the duck-ins where Edie's getting a cross screen, knows to keep both feet in the paint. There's times where Hatfield won't stop in the lane and will extend out to the first marker or to off the lane, where Edie's taught, I'm getting both feet in the paint. And when I roll, you know, I'm hard rolling, but I know where to stop. I know where to be. and his players do a great job of initiating and beating their man off of a ball screen, ball reversals, some false action to get him in that spot. So Creighton's really good at it as well. So, you know, that's something as far as understanding, okay, these are the sweet spots. This is where you want to get to. And, you know, that's something that you got to teach, because a lot of players will continue to drift, and that 2 or 3 inches makes a huge difference. They'll drift as they come off a flex cut or any type of action, and all of a sudden, you know, they're a foot outside the lane, and it just, it's a huge difference in having both feet in the paint.
The other thing for Louisville on the offensive end, and this kind of goes to like a lack of awareness, I think might be the right word for it, because, you know, Huntley Hatfield and Clark were the two dudes that you had going all game. Huntley Hatfield didn't score after the 11:25 mark of the second half, and Sky Clark didn't attempt a shot the last 9 minutes, 10 seconds of the game. When those are the two dudes that you got rolling, I guess I'm using that term pretty liberally, because they didn't drop like 25 or anything, but those, that was your offense, those two dudes. How do you not try to run some more stuff to get them, especially Sky Clark, who only missed one damn field goal the entire game, which is impressive. I mean, he took 8 of them, but why did Louisville go away from what they were doing, or rather, why did they let Notre Dame take that away so easily?
That's a common thing with teams when you get down and they're down double digits, and all of a sudden you're just not going to be as patient, because you're trying to get, it's a mindset for all basketball teams. You're trying to get a 9-point play or a 10-point play, and you're thinking, okay, I come down and shoot a quick three or drive quickly because I want to cut into that lead. So instead of running the stuff that you're patient with, that you've actually been successful with, you're rushed and you're impatient. And as a coach, you're kind of helpless because guys are coming down and you don't want to stop it every single time, but they're not getting the ball to the guys who are making plays. And that's normal of teams who are down, especially in the situation that Louisville was.
Yeah, and especially, you know, you look at, to me, the key stretch of this game was the under 8 timeout. Yeah. I forget who it was, mm-hmm. Notre Dame or Louisville. Someone called, you know, the first timeout of the second half, always media timeout. Mm-hmm. And then they play for 15, 20 seconds, whatever it was. Then they have another dead ball for the under 8 timeout. So you have, you know, 4.5, 5 minutes roughly to instruct your team and get them on the right page. Out of that under 8 timeout, they leave Shrewsbury open off a baseline out of bounds for a wide open three. Right. Then Shrewsbury hits another three in transition. That sparks a 16-2 run from the under 8 to the under 4 timeout that completely took the game out of reach. Louisville was only down 8 at that point. Not that I'm saying that I was guaranteeing they were going to win or anything, but you're very much like in the ball game. And to have that lack of awareness on the defensive end, 2 possessions in a row, give up 2 really easy open 3-pointers to a dude that was scorching all night from behind the arc. That, to me, is a lack of awareness, lack of focus, lack of executing a game plan. No matter how you want to put it, you can't let that happen. That wasn't the only time either. Louisville gave up 2 wide-open 3s off a baseline out-of-bounds plays. That's absolutely inexcusable in a game that, you know, you're trying to win, and we're even favored to win in this game. Louisville's favored by 3.5 points. I mean, Notre Dame's not a great basketball team. Micah Shrewsbury, you know, getting them to play with effort, especially on the defensive end, and they're trying to lay a foundation. But they came to the into this game 10-16. And you got worked both in every facet of the game. But to me, that just stood out like, okay, you had that much time to prepare your team for that baseline out of bounds, and you give up a wide open three. And then you give up another wide open three the next possession. That's not good. It's just, I know that there's not really a better way of putting it. It's just, that's not a sign of a program that's getting better to me when you give up stuff like that.
No, but that was not something that was unique to the end of the game. That was, you know, the first 3 threes by Notre Dame, there was no ball pressure. One of those was a miscommunication where 2 guys ran towards the ball and they made one more pass to Shrewsbury. And so it wasn't something that was in, okay, all of a sudden we've had a lapse. It was a continual thing throughout that they struggle to identify what teams are trying to do, what they want to do. Are we switching? Are we hedging? Are we staying connected? Are we not letting them out? Those are things that they've been struggling with throughout the season. So, Jack, I don't have an answer as far as that goes, as far as, you know, why they're not connected, why they're not understanding that, why they don't have a sense of urgency. Why don't they have a disposition? I can't answer that.
Yeah. I mean, I have it charted right here. Notre Dame's first 5 threes. I mean, their first 8 points of the game were Shrewsbury step in three off of a bad rotation, uh-huh, by pump fake. Shrewsbury open three off a curl with the miscommunication that you talk about. Then Sky Clark fouls a shooter on a three.
Yes.
Kanetsky hits a three off, mm-hmm, off of the baseline out of bounds. The other one to go up seven midway through the first half, a drive and kick to a wide open Garrett Boo for a three, all part of a 15-2 run for Notre Dame. The last one being the pick and pop where, you know, they pass to the corner, both guys rotate over, they throw it back to Shrewsbury. I mean, Notre Dame came into this game, they're not a good 3-point shooting team. Contrary to popular belief, if you only watch Notre Dame on Wednesday night, Notre Dame, mm-hmm, came into this game 29.8% from three on the season. That's 328th in college basketball and last in the ACC. They were the worst offensively efficient team, the least offensively efficient team in the ACC coming into this game. And Louisville put up a very little resistance to that. To me, just the 3-point line has been the story for Louisville here in the month of February. Just
And as you're going on, that's what I was doing. I was looking at, like, you know, things I'd written down, which are all things that you're talking about. So please continue.
In the last three games, Louisville is 10 of 45 from three offensively, 22%. And their opponents, Boston College, Pittsburgh, and Notre Dame, during this three-game losing streak, 44%. In the month of February, Louisville is shooting 28.6% from three, 310th in the country, and they're allowing opponents to shoot 41% from three. That's 334th. So it's pretty simple. I mean, we can, you know, break down, chart every individual play we want, but they look at the big picture. Louisville has stopped hitting threes because they had that stretch in the middle of January where they were hitting some shots. And on the other end, they're still not defending the three. I mean, we've talked about it all year long. Even, you know, I remember way back with the Texas and the Indiana games. It was, well, you know, those aren't good 3-point shooting numbers. I think Indiana was 1 of 11 in that game. Texas was like 3 of 20 or something. But just look at the amount of wide open threes that the opponents are missing. That's something that's not going to continue. And that metronome floats back the other way, where Notre Dame's a really bad 3-point shooting team. But if you give them 15, 20 open looks, they're going to hit 12 of them.
But it's not, you know, it's not that they're a bad 3-point defense. It's that they're, you have to look at the macro there and the blow-bys that are allowed, the overhelp on drifts, the miscommunication as far as who's going to scramble and rotate and command the ball and so on. So the open threes are coming off of so many other mistakes defensively, from a paint touch to, you know, the blow-bys to out of position to are we denying, are we overhelping, are we not helping? So all those things are byproducts of the fact that these now they're making the extra pass and here comes an open shot. And that's why they're – 3-point defense is so egregious.
Right. I feel like, you know, there's a misconception about that to where people say, oh, you just got to, you know, make sure you're on the perimeter guarding like the 3-point line. Like I picture, you know, a guy at the top of the key, two guys on the wings, two guys on the corners, just standing there trying to take away a 3-point shot. No, so often it comes off of other action. I mean, I would throw pick and roll defense in there as well as a way teams get open threes against Louisville.
Yeah. That's when they do tag the roll. You know, you know, you have to, it's all connected. The guy who, and they've soft doubled so much. So whether you want to scramble and keep that guy high and send him out, fine. If you're going to just say, you know what, bust your ass back down, recover. I'm going to hold for half a second, have high hands on that ball screen. So it buys me half a second to recover back to the lift man. So he doesn't have an open three. Yeah. But those are things that you have to do. And Louisville's not doing those things.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's how you end up being what are they now? 8-18 on the season. It's rough.
Eight and nineteen.
There we go.
I was 3-13 in conference. Yeah.
Yeah. Dead,
that's dead the optimist in you. That's the optimist in you, Jack.
But I mean, you look at it now, there's four games left in the season. You get a week off. And who do you get after the week off? You go to Cameron Indoor to play Duke. That's not exactly the easiest game to have after what's happened the last week or so.
And it's not fun. You know, you go to practice and you know you're 3-13 in conference and you know those type of things. Yeah, it's not fun to get in every day and you know to get guys to compete and grind when you've gone through, you know, a losing streak. I mean, I've seen that. I've been a part of that, you know, and that's a hard thing to get these guys to just understand little things when you're a week out and you've had, you know, you've had the what you've gone through, and to get them to just keep going and grind, yeah, it's not easy.
As you guys know by now, we've partnered with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for the listeners and the viewers of the Field of 68 as we all get ready for the best month of the year, March Madness. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, you can use the bonus code FIELD150 and you will get $150 in free bets on your first wager with BetMGM, regardless of whether or not you win that first bet. Here's the best part. All you need to do is deposit and bet $5 of your hard-earned money. This is how you make it work. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using the bonus code FIELD150. That's FIELD150. Deposit at least $5 and place your first wager on any game. You will receive up to $150 in bonus bets regardless of the outcome of your bet. Just make sure you use that bonus code FIELD150 when you sign up. And remember, BetMGM is now available in one wallet in select states. As a New Jersey resident, this is super convenient when I have to go cover games in Philly or New York, which happens quite a bit. When you cross state borders, you just log into your existing account and fire away. You don't have to create a new account in each state. It's easy, it's simple, and it's clean. And most importantly, we have some fun stuff coming up for the conference tournaments and for the NCAA tournament. Bet insurance tokens, college hoops odds boost, and my personal favorite, a nice little parlay boost here and there. So download the BetMGM app and sign up today.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Big news, guys. I am thrilled to announce that we have partnered with Autograph, a company founded by the GOAT himself, Tom Brady. The Autograph fandom app gives you access to the best college hoops content, fan contests, and exclusive rewards like discounted tickets, all for doing the things that diehard fans like you already do, following your favorite team in the news and listening to podcasts just like this one. When Tom, and yes, I am calling him Tom, we're on a first name basis these days, co-founded Autograph, he had one mission in mind: change the fan experience for the better. It works like this. You get all of your college hoops content you want in one place. You get articles from your favorite writers, pods from your favorite hosts, contests from your favorite creators, all on the feeds and the sites that you already enjoy. But instead of having to go to all these different places, it all comes to you in one spot, the Autograph fandom app. But here's the best part. The more content that you consume, the higher you rank in the app. As you consider the level up in status on the app, you can unlock unique rewards curated exclusively for you. So download the free Autograph app in the App Store and use the referral code F68, that's F68, or tap in at the link in the description below or in the podcast app of your choosing to start earning points for doing something as normal as listening to this very podcast.
Yeah, but I mean, like, after that, though, I mean, everyone kept looking at those last three home games at the end of the year.
Right.
Boston College, Syracuse, and... and who's the third one?
Virginia Tech, that's Boston College. Yeah,
yeah. To where it's like,
look, I'm not gonna.
Does it matter?
I'm not gonna play. I don't want to play that game. But everybody was talking about, well, they're gonna get healthy when they have DePaul, Arkansas State, and Pepperdine.
Yeah,
you know, they go 1-2. So, you know, you just don't know. You know, after the Duke game, a guy like Sky Clark, because of his rib injury and some other things, you don't know, hey, my body's not right. You just never know what's going to happen with some of these guys.
And you have to credit Sky Clark. I feel like it is worth saying. The dude played with a broken rib on Wednesday night and was probably Louisville's best player. I mean, you know, shot the ball away from the field, was even Louisville's leading rebounder as you know, a guard with eight boards in that game. So you got to give him credit there for just finding his tail off and hanging in there. Yeah.
He competed, made some shots. Of course, I'm going to just, in the coach and me, you know, there's lapses. You know, he wouldn't pressure the basketball. Yep. he was lost on certain actions. But he's also trying to protect himself. You know, is that an excuse? I'm not making excuses for him. But, you know, he was able to score the ball, which is a credit to him, especially playing with a broken rib, which is, I'm sure we couldn't do a podcast with a broken rib. So, you know, kudos to him.
Very low chance. But it's the point being, like, at this point, I just don't think it matters. Like, even if they were to win those last three games, which what we've seen the last couple weeks or so, they probably won't win all three of those games at home.
Matters as far as
like a year three or trying to move on, stuff like that. Like does it make any difference if they're 8-23 or 10-21? No, to me, like,
yeah, I mean, at this point, with, you know, with those games that are left, you know, it's really not going to all of a sudden, you know, change. You're not going to see an absolute 180 in how they do things and how they guard in four games. Just not, the sample size is kind of, we've seen it. We know who they are.
Yeah, that was one of the things, like, I was listening just on the drive back from Tuscaloosa on Wednesday night. You know, I was listening a little bit to, you know, our guy Ethan Moore on the postgame show. It's crazy to me. Like, I've always said this about both Louisville and Kentucky fans. Like, I remember I was producing back for ESPN Louisville a lot of the UK postgame shows the year they went 9-16. How it's impressive how mad those two fan bases can stay at their teams when they know the season is already a lost cause. But for me, there were people called in and saying, this is the last straw. This is the one where you got to fire Kenny after this. I'm like, Why is it the random game in February against Notre Dame that's the last straw? I mean, I just don't see how it's been the same stuff we've been seeing for 2 years. And it's a tough thing for us to talk about at this point, but because it feels like just a foregone conclusion. But I mean, Kenny comes out and says the quote saying, you know, he doesn't feel like his job's in danger. And like, he doesn't seem to have the sense of urgency, which I guess, to be fair, like, what else is he supposed to say in that spot when you're being asked that question? But it's just a weird dynamic at this point, to where it's like people trying to use every game, win or loss, as a referendum on the job. I'm like, guys, you have the track record. It's 12-45. Not every game is going to be this seismic change one way or the other if they win or lose, especially, you know, those three home games at
47. Not trying to pick on Coach Payne.
12-47. What? Yes. I got to keep updating in my head after every game. Unfortunately, that's where they're at this point. But I just, at this point, if you're Josh Hurd, you're kind of letting the string play out. You're not, I mean, you haven't fired him to this point, so they're not going. I'm pretty confident in the fact that they're not going to make a midseason change at this stage with, you know, four games left in the regular season. But, but I mean, just, I don't even know where I'm going with this, to be honest.
These last four games are not going to all of a sudden be an elixir and all of a sudden everything has changed in his favor. It's, you know, it's evident that, you know, Coach Payne is it's been a struggle for him. And, you know, I'm sure Josh Hurd's, you know, doing his due diligence and it's unfortunate because this fan base deserves, you know, a team that just is competing for not just the NCAA tournament, but for national championships. And so, you know, it's, and you mentioned it, you know, about listening to Ethan Moore, and, you know, I'm doing radio shows here still on 93.9 and 680 in Louisville. And, you know, it's apathy. There's the callers are just, it's not like the phones are lit up and everybody wants to vent. It's kind of like, okay, this is what it is. And we want improvement now. Yeah. So I think they just got to realize, you know, it's something will probably happen right after the season.
Yeah, and that's the worst place to be was when you get that apathy because, you know, you're used to everyone being really, really angry. And I thought you got a good amount of that after the Notre Dame game. Things kind of flared up a bit. But, I mean, Pittsburgh, you didn't really see too much of that. Same with Boston
College. It flared up with Notre Dame, but, again, not to the point where, you know, you had some. Yeah. And I heard some callers on Ethan's show as well. But, again, it's not like the numbers that were – even speaking to Spencer Brown, like, you know, the numbers have dwindled as far as the calls and all those type of things. Yeah. Now, Kentucky, they're a little different story.
So. That was one of the crazier endings on Wednesday night, that Kentucky game.
That's all I saw was the ending. Yeah. That's all I saw.
That's pretty much all I saw too, which that was a great one down in Baton Rouge. Did you catch any of the UConn-Creighton game on Tuesday?
I didn't. Yeah. This has been way too busy with certain things, and that's the night that I had my daughter with me. Fair. We played some pickleball, and nice. we ended up watching the kids' baking championship on Max, so I recommend that to everybody. But for me, that's probably one of the first Connecticut games I've missed. You know, their associate head coach Kamani Young is one of my best friends, so nice. You know, we talk all the time. We work together at FIU. But you know, I still think they're the cream of the crop. Yeah. So for me, you know, if you were going to say, okay, you know, you have to decide right now, I'd say UConn's going to win it.
First of all, what was the best baking dish that was made?
Well, there's so many. So they challenges. Let me tell you something, Jack. Here's the thing. It's a show for kids. You got Valerie Bertinelli and a guy named Duffy Goldman, but they send a kid home every week. And the kids like in the kitchen crying sometimes because he can't get the, you know, the cake to bake or whatever. And then when they send the kid home, the kid's, you know, crying. And to me, it's very emotional. I don't know. It's not for the faint of heart. I'll tell you that much.
That's fair. That's very fair. On UConn, like I'm not too worried about them. I mean, like Creighton just had one of those games. Like at one point, they hit 19.
They're good.
They had hit 19 really out of 26 field goals at one point. I mean, exactly. Ashcraft had the game of his life. He gives them a little bit of a different dimension when he's able to score like that because they've really been missing that ever since Nembhard transferred out to Gonzaga. Just that guy that can beat you off the dribble and create his own shot.
Exactly.
And when he's able to do that, that makes them a much, much, much more difficult team to defend. I mean, like, you got to be like, they absolutely blasted Marquette last weekend. They're fine. They're great.
They are.
They're a lot of fun to watch.
They're on the road. They're in conference. You know, you're everybody's Kansas City Chiefs right now. So that's the way it goes. That's college basketball, you know. My last year here, when we went to the Final Four, we lost our last home game on senior night to South Florida, you know, and, you know, so like those things, it's just, there's hiccups along the way, you know, but Connecticut's just fine.
What was the, I know there was the South Florida loss that was like 59-52, I think it was. Then the next game you guys lost at Syracuse to end the regular season where I think you only scored like, I don't know if you guys broke 50 on that one. What was the change between that and the Big East tournament where you guys ripped off, you know, 10 in a row, win the Big East, and then go to the Final Four?
You know, looking back on it, I mean, you know, attention to details, too. I mean, Richard Pitino, was just a huge factor in understanding, you know, just because he has the last name. And I don't know if you caught, I stayed up and watched New Mexico and Colorado State last night. But just because his last name's Pitino, the guy's a worker. The guy really puts time in. We would really look at ways to attack. He learned that from Billy Donovan, too, is that, you know, a lot of times in scouting, Jack, is that everybody's looking for what teams run. We want to take this away. We want to track this or do that. When Billy Donovan was really big on, okay, how are we attacking them? And what's the best way to score against them? So we spent a lot of time moving forward on ways to improve our offense by looking at the weaknesses of the teams we were playing.
Yeah, I feel that. And on the defensive end, that defense was always going to keep you guys in
game. We'll leave that to Rick. Yeah, we'll be fine there. Yeah.
Yeah, I figured that was probably that week or so stretch before the Big East tournament started.
It was
probably
a doozy.
Probably not the best of times to be around the program. But, man, that what a heck of a run that was. Especially, you know, that Florida game against Billy Donovan. I'll ask this. I know we got to get out of here, but I'll always remember Peyton Siva fouls out when you guys are making the run in those last 8 minutes. He fouls out going into the under four timeout, And Rick goes over to the bench and he just puts his hands on his head. Like, if you're watching it like this, and I'm like, oh man, I can only imagine what he's going to say the next 2-3 minutes in that huddle. But I mean, Russ Smith came in, plays the point the rest of the game. They force a couple turnovers. Shane Bohannon was huge down that stretch. This is a lot more
makes
fun
that,
for
like,
me than
what the current team makes that does makes that times. That yeah. incredible like turnaround jump shot that like you know was like no yes you know one of those and
yeah.
Gorgie had a huge stun. I think it was might have been Kenny Boykin. Coming down the lane, but or even Bradley Beal, but he swipes and stunts and causes a loose ball. And I think Russ came up with that one. So, you know, just little things we did defensively and just, we were really attacking and it was just, that game was a blast, but you know, trust me, there's a bunch of things that I my memoir, my book on the Rick Pitino-isms can come out and it would be enjoyable. For sure.
Yeah. I mean, I'll leave it at this. I remember that game as being the only game during like the Peyton Russ Smith era that I can remember where a team actually was able to shoot you guys out of the matchup zone, which Florida did in that first half. And I don't think they hit a three in the second half, or maybe it was like one or two of like 12 or something like that.
Well, there's your perfect example because that's what Billy looked at ways to attack that matchup. And they did a really good job of overloads and running some shallow cuts and getting guys open. And then when we switched to man, it was a little different, but like that was what he did very well.
Yeah. Which always still weird to say that was 12 years ago already. But I mean, that was one of the epic runs, obviously in Louisville basketball history. That's all we got for today. Coach, really always appreciate the time. We'll get going again next week. For Coach Lieberman, I'm Jack Grossman. This has been Floyd Street's Finest. Again, catch us on Field of 68 Podcast Network, Twitter, YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, all that stuff. Also, I believe, Coach, we're airing this on the Sunday Morning Hangover right now. Or on Sunday this week as well on ESPN 68.
All right. I know. Well, no,
Phil's got the new kiddo. Nick, I think he's traveling the women's team, so we're gonna be on the old AM stick this Sunday as well, re-airing as well. So appreciate you guys letting us do that. And Coach, again, always appreciate the time. We'll catch you next week here on Floyd Street's Finest.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers. The trusted choice recommended by leading experts with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.